This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go to the phones, though, and see what you guys think. I think it'd be hypocritical for me to say all the things I said and not at least let other people chime in if we're trying to be empathetic and inclusive. At 800-636-1067. Pete's in Tysons. Pete, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
Hey, good morning, Craig.
Morning.
Or afternoon.
Yeah, it is 1 o'clock, isn't it? Good Lord, when did that
happen? It really is cruised. I like your program.
Thank you.
I do disagree with you on this, and I want to ask you a quick question and then give you my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be saying what you were saying about Mason Rudolph if you knew that Myles Garrett was lying and that basically he was lying about that?
I would say a different version of it, and I will let you express your opinion in a second, but it's too complex of a thing to simply say that without an explanation. So here's what I would say.
Sure.
My disappointment in Mason Rudolph is he seems to lack the understanding of the seriousness of the situation. If he showed some kind of empathy or some kind of understanding of why this is such a serious accusation, instead of just throwing up his hands and going, "Oh my God, I can't believe someone would call me a racist." Like, if he would have said, "It's disappointing that Myles Garrett would lie about such an important subject. The history of this word," and lay out some information that shows he understands why this is so serious, then, yeah, I would take that way better than this just outright defensiveness that his statement says. Even if he then called Myles Garrett a liar, but he showed an understanding of why that is such a serious thing.
Okay, I see that as a fair point. I will say, though, you know, there's another way to look at it, and that is I don't see racial reconciliation from comments on social media, so I'll agree with you on that. But I think you may be underestimating the impact of being called that in a workplace, which is really a mixture of different cultures. I think if you're called a racist, then if you react to it vehemently, you're in some ways you're basically saying this is important to me because I am not, and I take my fellow and colleagues and employees and coaches very seriously. And also too, in this situation, as a he said, she said, if this was in front of a real judge and jury and they couldn't have a witness, they just base it on the action. What is the action and what should the NFL do to address it?
Sure, but the problem with that is, Pete, thanks for the call. The problem is this isn't a court of law, and I'm not saying that there should be any further actions taken. Like, this is about the public discussion. This is about the way the story is consumed. This is not about that I'm saying Mason Rudolph deserves to be punished for how he's reacting. I just think that he's actually making the situation worse, and that if there is... I don't know how else to say this other than this. Somehow being called a racist has become worse than being a racist. This is a societal thing that goes way beyond sports talk radio, and I'm probably touching a third rail that I shouldn't go any farther on in this format. It's a conversation that I'm going to have in a different place and it would engage in a different way. But I feel like if I don't go that far, I'm not doing the conversation justice. There's too much concern about being called a racist instead of being one. And understanding that you need to have some empathy and that the reasons why, and I keep saying the reasons why this is a big deal is because through the history of this country, a lot of freaking people of color have died. And the last thing they heard was that word. And if you can't understand that, and why, if Myles Garrett thought that that's what he heard would cause that kind of reaction, then you need to reframe everything right now about this conversation. And that is why Mason Rudolph getting defensive is ridiculous, even if he's right. Just say, hey, I feel really terribly that Myles Garrett thought that I said that, and I don't know why he thought that because I didn't say it. However, it is, if he thought that's what I said, I much more understand his reaction. I want Myles to know that I would never say that, and I would like to move forward from this. You don't go on offense. That's why I'm so, like, what Mason Rudolph has done to continually escalate this bothers me so much. It completely lacks understanding of the situation and why what he is accused of doing is so serious, as opposed to just lashing out and saying, I didn't do it. Let's go to Pete in Kensington. Pete, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show. So just a couple points. So one, I'm with you 100%. I'm so glad Garrett got reinstated, as he should have. I also want to clear up a little bit of your story that you got wrong. Garrett did just swing his helmet at Randolph. He did connect and hit him with the bottom part of his helmet. Had he hit him with the top part of the helmet, this would be a very different conversation. And I think you're minimizing what he did when you say he took a swing at Randolph.
I said it's basically assault on a football field. I don't know if I need to be more clear than that.
Well, you started off by saying he took a swing at him with his helmet and he tried to reconnect it with his head. He could have killed the guy, but that's not my point. I think you guys just touched on it a little bit. You know, I think for us to sit here and try to talk about race relations from the outcome of a football game is nothing other than silly. I mean, these are football players. You get punched in the face, you're going to punch back. And to have a discussion that is so much deeper and more sensitive around race relations on a play in a football game, come on, guys, let's talk sports.
Okay, so here's the problem with that comment. The problem is that whether he's got a uniform or not on, Myles Garrett's black.
So what if Randolph was black?
Well, then Myles Garrett wouldn't have been nearly as upset about him saying that word if he thought he said it, because that's how that works.
If he's telling the truth.
Sure, but whether he's telling the truth is kind of irrelevant. He thought he heard that.
Why is it irrelevant?
Because the reaction...
It always matters, I thought.
No, it does matter in terms of how Randolph, and I gotta go, or Rudolph, you said his name wrong four times, so I was to the point that I was confused. Because... in terms of what happens to Mason Rudolph, the truth matters. But if Myles Garrett thinks that he heard that, then you digest his reaction very differently. I'm not saying that it justifies it by any means. You can't commit assault. You can't try to blast someone with a helmet. Or however you want me to say that, so that it satisfactorily captures the violence of what Myles Garrett absolutely did. But yes, one of the great things about sports, and we're done with this after this, so I appreciate everyone calling in, but I got to get to the Astros thing, and we are going to talk sports. But like, I thought this was important, and this is why. One of the great things about sports is it often is a meritocracy. It often doesn't matter whether you're black or white. It just matters whether or not you can play. But in a situation that becomes personal, those things enter back into the fray. A touchdown doesn't come off the board or count any less or whatever because of anybody's anything, any identifying characteristic. You cross the goal line, you get 6 points. Myles Garrett, you tackle the quarterback behind the line of scrimmage with the ball. It's a sack. The ball stays exactly where that was. It has all of the impact, no matter whether it's Myles Garrett or J.J. Watt. But when it becomes personal like that, to try to make someone, and it doesn't have to be necessarily white or black. If there was an openly gay player in the NFL and he was called a certain slur and reacted like that, the same rules apply. So the identifying characteristics of human beings, the things that make them who they are, don't stop because they put football pads on. And when those things are brought back into the fray, to ask the people who are humans to ignore them is an unreasonable ask. Craig Hoffman with you on The Fan. Hard left turn. We talk about the Astros, baseball's horrendous job handling it, and what the hell Buffalo Wild Wings has to do with it next, before we get joined by Robert Flores to talk about the same things at 1:30. I'm Craig Hoffman. This is The Fan. Coming up in 12 minutes, Robert Flores from MLB Network. So, this Astros thing is somehow getting worse still. Astros in camp at West Palm Beach, their owner, Jim Crane, and others, including Carlos Correa, have spoken. Jose Altuve have spoken. And instead of taking ownership, it feels like the last segment, but a lot less charged. Instead of taking ownership and trying to heal and move forward, they denied. Now, some of it was just comically stupid. Jim Crane, let me see if I can pull back and find the exact quote real quick. This is a benefit of me not tweeting very much this week. Where are we? Yeah, Jim Crane, 55 seconds apart, I think it was. Said, we don't believe that this affected the games, and then said, I never said it didn't affect the games. Like, at that point, you just laugh. You just go, hey, what a dumb thing to say. What a dumber thing to deny, you said less than a minute later. And we can all frustratingly laugh so we don't cry at how insane all of this is. But I just, the most frustrating part to me this week wasn't even the Astros denying what happened, what all that kind of stuff. The most frustrating part of this week was Rob Manfred being disappointed in the Astros for not taking ownership of this. It's almost like he's the commissioner of baseball and could do something about it. That when the Astros clearly didn't get the message about how serious what they did was by the fines and the suspensions, that he could have gone, oh, crap, maybe we didn't do enough. Like, he wasn't the one at the head of all of this. And so he goes on ESPN. I guess the interview came out this morning on Outside the Lines, sat down with Carl Ravage. And they talked about this whole thing. And he expressed more disappointment and more just being bummed out about the Astros' comments and lamenting the fact that they didn't take ownership of this. While his actions still say, hey, please make sure that you do not punish the players. It just, when you have crises in life, you'd hope leaders step up and meet the moment. And Rob Manfred had, on some level, a pretty easy job in that department because he's following Bud Selig, who kind of couldn't have been worse when crisis hit baseball. He manufactured crises, the All-Star game tie. And obviously never met the moment of the steroid era properly. Still gets put in the Hall of Fame because, hey, he did it for 30 years. Woohoo! Revenue went up at a time when all the other pro sports also had revenue go up. Woohoo! Good job, bud. But for Manfred, like, this is the biggest issue of his era. And what did he do when the very integrity of the game was at stake? Not enough. And now everybody's pissed. And I want to explore with Roflo at 1:30 and with Clinton at 2 what else could have been done. Because then the question becomes, well, then what do you do? There's some pretty interesting ideas out there. Baseball is the one sport that has minor leagues. You relegate the Astros. Could you ban them from the postseason like the NCAA does? Those seem rather extreme. Interesting. Not completely out of bounds. Maybe the relegation would be. Who's the AAA team that gets to come up and be in the big leagues? That's fun. But who amongst the players, if this was a player-driven scandal like it was categorized as by Rob Manfred, takes the punishment here? No one? That seems insane. And baseball is a sport that generally polices itself. And they do it with baseballs going at people's heads or butts or ribs. And if baseball isn't going to be like, hey, whoa, okay, this, y'all, we got this one, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to get people getting hit in the head, in the ribs, in the butt. Jose Altuve's collarbone is probably going to be a popular target this year. And guess what? That's also insane, because throwing baseballs 100 miles an hour at other human beings should never be allowed ever. It's the most childish garbage that happens on a regular basis unchecked in sports. It's dumber than any other thing that happens in sports that we just like, oh, well, it happens. No. Like, if you throw at someone, you should not be allowed to play for a long time. It's super dangerous. But Manfred just seems to be watching this as a pundit like the rest of us instead of someone who can actively do something about it. And it drives me insane. So I'm wondering what the limitations are, and I'm going to need someone who knows the sport better than me to talk about that, which is why we'll have Robert Flores on in like 5 minutes. First, let's go to your calls on some of this, and then maybe we'll dive into some other stuff. Let's go to Sal in Arlington. Sal, thanks for holding through the last couple segments. Appreciate you. You're on the Fan.
Oh, hey, Craig. Thanks a lot. I mean, I just wanted to compliment you on bringing up the aspect of society and the racial components of the incident there with the helmet swinging. You know, the guy who called you was, I heard almost that same attitude parroted on right-wing radio, the same sort of logic, and you're right on about that, and I get what you're saying. So, I mean, really, that's good stuff, and we need more of that, because this is really a societal thing in a lot of instances in sports. I just wanted to throw in about the Astros thing and about the union. I don't know if I'm getting out of line with this, but I heard Chris earlier blaming everything on the union, and the union, I don't think, had anything to do with the agreement that was made, if anything, about granting immunity to players. I would think the last thing the union wanted to do was side with a bunch of cheaters, knowing that the majority of their members wouldn't have been very happy with that kind of agreement. I think it was kind of a thing they put together more for the benefit of the owners than the players. They ran it through. The union probably said, okay, well, looks good to us. Go ahead and do it. But the union doesn't have the kind of power to go around making agreements like, or coming up with things like that. You know, the management owns the store. They're the only ones who can do those sort of things. And I just thought it was a little unfair for people to just constantly beat up on the union for something that I don't think they really instigated or had anything to do with.
Yeah, Sal, thanks for the call. The union's in a tough spot, because unions essentially are a group of lawyers, and lawyers' job is to defend their people. But the problem is, when you're a union and you have employees who hurt other employees, then you are all of a sudden looking out for both sides. Like, if you're, whether it's trying to protect players from punishment in terms of suspension, because you don't want them to lose out on 50 games of pay or whatever they'd be suspended. Or the actual physical act of throwing at someone. But, like, the people who are originally hurt are the ones who feel like they got cost World Series. Like, they're the original victims, if you want to use that word here. So the union's in a really tough spot. Baseball has to be the adult in the room here, and Major League Baseball and the commissioner's office has failed miserably. I appreciate everyone calling. If you want to stick on hold through the next 20 minutes, please do. If not, if you just want to listen and call back, I'll take more of your calls at 1:45. But we got Robert Flores from MLB Network next, so we're going to go and rock with him right now. Then we'll get back to your calls at 1:45 on all this. 800-636-1067 is the phone number when you need it. Robert Flores, MLB Network, joins me, Craig Hoffman, on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline next. Craig Hoffman with you on The Fan. Clinton Yates at the top of the hour on the Astros cheating scandal, which continues to rock Major League Baseball right now on that very topic. And we'll talk a little Nats, too. Some fun with Robert Flores of MLB Network. Roflo, what's up, man? How are you?
Good, Craig. How are you?
Good. Robert joining us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. So if I had told you that it'd be, what is today, February 16th, and we'd still be talking about this as the number one story in baseball, the night that all this happened, the night that the suspensions were announced and the investigation was released, would you have said, yeah, that sounds about right? Or is it surprising to you that this is still running as hot as it is?
No, I would figure that we would still be talking about it. And I would say, yeah, that sounds about right. It's something that's, it's not going to go away. The Astros will continue to be asked about it. They can, and I'm sure that they want this to go away, that they don't want to be asked about it. But you know what? That's not their, they don't get to choose when people are over it. They don't get to choose when opponents are over it, because that's the position they put themselves in.
What would be, so the general consensus around baseball, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but it seems to be that what the punishment that was had was not enough. And then the question becomes, like, what else could they have done? What are the challenges that Rob Manfred had in doing something else, whether it be like a postseason ban to go to a more extreme route, or to suspending players? Like, what are the challenges that Major League Baseball faced in going beyond what they did?
Well, I think one thing you have to look at is that if you were to try to suspend players or punish players, you're going to have to deal with the union, right? The MLBPA would protect their players, even though much to probably to the protest of members of their rank and file, right? But the union would protect their players. So, and then, okay, you're vacating a title. You people want to, you know, strip them of the title, like it's the NCAA, or, you know, John Calipari was coaching the team or something like that. So what do you do? You just say that year didn't happen. Do you give it to the Dodgers? I mean, do you give that World Series title to the Dodgers? I mean, they did lose game 2 and game 7 at home. So we're just
going to
give
the Yankees, who lost to the Astros in the ALCS,
You're going to give the World Series title to the Yankees.
Well, I'm saying, yeah, because either way, one of those teams is like, hey,
yeah,
what about us?
So, in this post-fact canceled society, anything the Astros say now, it's not going to help. If you hate the Astros, anything that they say moving forward, that's not going to change. Anything they say is not going to change your opinion of the Astros. But that's the situation they put themselves into. So, you know, they can continue on this apology tour, but it's not going to do any good. Anything that Rob Manfred did, short of taking away the franchise charter and just moving and just taking away a franchise from the city of Houston, that's not going to be enough. It was never going to be enough. So, like I said, do we just give it to the Dodgers? You know, they lost. They lost game two and game seven at home. Do we give it to the Yankees? They scored one run in game six and seven, leading 3-2 in the ALCS. So it's a weird spot because everyone, it's not going to be enough. Nothing will be enough, and people just choose to want to stay mad. That's kind of what we are. That's kind of what we are as a society. That's what we are as fans. That's how we consume media. I mean, like I said, in this post-fact canceled society we live in, nothing's going to be enough, and that's unfortunate.
Robert Flores of MLB Network with us on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. By the same token, the flip side of that token, I made the horrific mistake of dipping into Astros Twitter yesterday, and I was quite surprised at how fervent the defense of the Astros was. And you are from the city of Houston, obviously an objective professional, but you have a pulse of what is going on there. What is the reaction in Houston to all this as the rest of baseball hates the Astros, despises what they did, and universally agrees they cheated in a way that is not okay? And so what is the reaction in Houston to their team that they cheered on winning a title?
It goes back to what I said earlier. On the flip side, if you love the Astros and root for them and saw what they did in 2017, there's nothing that anyone can say or show you. There's no report that can convince you to say, that this team is a sham, that this team is, that they cheated in 2017. I mean, that there is going to be a large portion of that fan base that will root for them and cheer for them no matter what. And I would ask the question, what are they supposed to do? Right? I mean, are they supposed to just, like I said, just burn jerseys, burn their tickets, not go to games? And so there's nothing, everyone is in their corners. And there's nothing, anything that can come out or say that will get people to change their mind. That's just where we are. And that goes beyond this topic. That goes for a variety of other topics, including topics in that city you're living in.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, this is kind of like a, I think this whole thing puts a mirror up to what we are as, like I said, as fans, as consumers of media, journalism in general. There's all these different layers and subtexts and nuance that is involved in this story that gets lost, and it's not going to be really revealed or touched on until like a definitive documentary is done 5 years from now, 10 years from now. But the bottom line is the report says the Astros cheated in 2017 and in parts of 2018. They did not, according to the report, they did not cheat in 2019. So what do you do with that? Those are the facts, according to the report. Is it possible that there is some nefarious activity that could have been ongoing all the way through 2019? I guess anything is possible, but we have to look at, like me as a journalist / host, have to look at what the report says. And you look at what the Astros, you take a look at what their news conference was this week. And yes, the part at the podium with the players reading the prepared statement and the owner, I'm sure if they had to do it over again, they would probably want to take that back because it wasn't quite hitting the ear right. So, but everything that I think that they've been saying in their clubhouse, including that day, I think that's maybe some small steps towards what sounds like an apology. But like I said, going back to the main point, no matter what they could say, it's not going to change the minds of people that, A, want to be mad, and, two, didn't like them to begin with.
So what – do you think they understand fully, though, like what they did and how big of a deal this is? Because that to me is what's striking.
I don't think that they will understand or fully feel it until that first road trip in Oakland. I think that they're in every subsequent road trip. I think that this is going to be a season in which unlike any team has faced in history, as far as the vitriol, the anger and the disgust that they're going to feel and see at every opposing ballpark this year. And you know what? That's, again, that's the position they put themselves in. Because, Craig, when you look at, and again, the report says they didn't do anything in 2019. So if you start from there and you believe that, and you look at what this group did in 2019, I go back to the fact, when you look at what they did in 2019, why did they have to do what they did, according to the report, in 2017 and in parts of 2018? It just wasn't, if you believe those facts, it just, to me, I go back to why. They didn't need to. Why? Why did they do that?
Right.
And that's only something that they know. You know, that for every man in that clubhouse that was on that 2017 that participated in that, that's something only that they can answer. And that's something that they're going to have to live with. So.
Real quick, on the way out here, Robert Flores of MLB Network. What do you think of, just generally, of the Nats this year? Obviously, they lose Anthony Rendon, mm-hmm. who goes and signs with the Angels. Some other pieces in and out, not quite as significant. They do re-sign Steven Strasburg. They no longer have the "we've never done it" chip. What do you make of the Nationals and how they shape up this year?
Look, when I look at the Nationals, I still see some studs at the top of the rotation. Max Scherzer, hopefully, is he dealt with injury in the latter part of last season, but he shoved when he had to shove. And I think the important thing that comes out of obviously winning the championship and getting that trophy, that's the most important thing. But I think secondary to that was the maturation and the evolution of Steven Strasburg. He was always an elite pitcher, but what he did towards the in that World Series run, towards the latter half of last season, I think he went from elite to the elite of the elite. And I think that's a good sign for the Nationals. Hopefully he can keep that momentum going. It's a tough division, man. It is a real tough division. You know, the Braves are loaded. I think the Mets are going to be better. I think the Phillies are going to be better. But listen, the Nats showed that, hey, we don't have to win the division to win it all. So I'm not going to count this group out because one of what they did last year under very tough circumstances. And two, baseball is such a difficult game to make any sweeping prognostications because the season's so long. There's so many variables. There's so many factors and there's so many different things that can go wrong. But like I said, I'm not ready to say that to count the Nats completely out, but it's going to be tough.
Robert Flores, MLB Network, when can we catch you on television? What else you got going on? I always know you're doing stuff.
I'll be on MLB Tonight this afternoon or this evening at 6 o'clock Eastern, and on Monday, 6 o'clock Eastern, and then on opening day, MLB Central returns on MLB Network, 10 a.m. Eastern, with myself, Lauren Shahadi, and Mark DeRosa.
Excellent. And are you playing any video games for people to watch?
I stream MLB The Show, a little NBA 2K. I do that on my Facebook page, and people can go to facebook.com/RealRoFlo. I've got some videos there. I play some people, online, play some people in my chat room, and so it's a good time.
You'd like to know what it's like to watch, people stream video games and then have like a professional broadcaster doing the game, then just go to Robert's.
Yeah, it's kind of fun because I feel like, we're talking, I get a little Astros sign stealing weary. So I kind of don't really talk about that in the chat because it's a whole weird dynamic. But we talk about Mookie Betts and the season and the trades and the signings. So it's a good time.
Excellent. All right. People can go check that out. Robert, always appreciate the time on the radio and hope that we cross paths soon in person, my friend.
Absolutely, man. Have a good one.
All right. That's Robert Flores, everybody. I almost did the Tony Kornheiser, Robert Flores, boys and girls, but I'm not Tony Kornheiser. Greg Hoffman, that's me with you here on 106.7 The Fan. Let's get back to your calls next. We got PJ who's hanging out, Michael's on hold, and you at 800-636-1067. We're talking Strohs before Clinton Yates joins us at the top of the hour to continue the baseball conversation. This is your home for Washington Nationals baseball, 106.7 The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you on a Sunday for an hour and change more. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, Clinton Yates on the Astros scandal. I want to do a little sound segment, a little real things real people said in real microphones, segment we haven't done in a while. Darius is looking at me like, you want to do what now? Because I haven't told him what the sound is yet. Don't worry, we'll take care of that in this very commercial break. Because there's some good sound floating out there. Also, I would like to talk a little DC Defenders. Because they won big time yesterday, 27-0. And I think that is worth talking about. I'm also curious to see what the TV numbers and all that kind of stuff were, which shouldn't be coming out any time now. But we'll get to all that in a little bit. We're continuing to talk about the Astros scandal here, 800-636-1067. Let's go to Michael in D.C. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Craig. given a lot of thought and been doing a lot of reading about all this, but I mean, number one, I'm a baseball fan at heart. But also, too, it occurred to me that the question that was your guest asked is, why did they do it? The report from Major League Baseball did more than indicate that they cheated. One of the things the report says was it was because of the Astros culture. And that stuck with me. What Astros culture? What is the Astros culture? How is it different than other cultures as to why they did this? That's what was stated in the report. It was because of their culture. It also did some other things. It named two people. Nobody else, two people. It named Alex Cora, who was the bench coach, and it named Carlos Beltran, who was a player, but given who we know Carlos Beltran to be, you know, he's a senior member of the Astros. He's been around forever. He went on to become named the Mets coach, manager. Alex Cora goes on to be the manager for the Red Sox. So they're pointed out. These are the two people who are responsible for this cheating. Why they cheated? Culture. Who did it? These two people. All right, then we go further. The manager says he knew about it. He saw it going on, but did nothing.
Okay, Michael, where's this going? Let's land the plane.
I'm gonna get there. Please hold on.
I don't have time to hold on. This is my radio show, not yours.
What is the culture and what should be done next? What the culture is, and listening to what the owners say, it was win at all costs. The manager did nothing. Because he knew what the culture was. What was he
doing? Right. All right. Thanks for the call. The point that he was trying to make, and I will make it in 15 seconds, and we'll get on to the rest of the calls, is that the culture in Houston was a problem. They thought they were different. If you look at how they tanked and all the bragging they did about that, how about they were smarter than everyone else, and that was the culture in Houston. We are smarter than everyone else. And so everybody working there thought that they could do stuff that was different than everybody else. And the problem is they crossed some lines that everyone else had said, hey, we don't go past here. That's the point. Thanks for the call. Let's go to PJ and Reston. Thanks for calling. You were on the Fan. I'm sorry you had to sit through all that.
Oh, my man, it's all good. It is. I'm sitting at home with relaxing with my podcast up, so it's all good. I just wanted to really quickly touch on a few things. You know, I really like the approach you took towards the Miles Garrett, Mason Rudolph, not Randolph, situation.
Thank
you. It's a really, really important thing that you're taking that angle because literally just days ago, we went from in a couple years from one president gave a Medal of Freedom to Maya Angelou.
We don't need to look. I think you and I probably people can tell that we're going to agree on what you're about to say, but we don't need to go there. It's appreciated. The sentiment is factual and appreciated, but yes. let's stick with the topic.
Roger that. Now moving on to the Astros. Something about Correa when he came out and defended Altuve. I appreciate his passion, but it's still a little bit hard for everyone else to believe it because when we all just use simple deduction with, you know, don't take off my shirt as he's clearing third base, and Altuve himself apologized a couple days ago for cheating, it's hard to believe what Correa is saying. And even if Altuve saw it but didn't do anything about it, he's still a little bit complicit. And the last thing to me is that the easy solution with the whole Astros thing is you take away the World Series. You give the Dodgers not the World Series title. You make the Dodgers the NL champions, and you just simply have it a year with no title. You have the Yanks as the AL champ, the Dodger, the NL champ. And also, this to me is more egregious than what Pete Rose did. I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, just with maybe some kind of a mention of his cheating. It's not a moral Hall of Fame. You got Ty Cobb and other people like of ill repute in the Hall of Fame. And this, to me, what the Astros did, it's way beyond what Pete Rose did, because any athlete in any high-level sport, if it's baseball, football, whatever, if you know where the other team is going to go or what they're going to do, football, basketball, hockey, it doesn't matter. That is more advantageous than any PED or anything of any kind.
Yeah, PJ, I don't disagree with that. Thank you for the call. I mean, I don't disagree with the fact that this is more egregious than what Rose did, because Rose was betting on his own team and would obviously have tried to do everything to win because he bet on his own team. And maybe even, you know, does it affect the integrity of the game? Is he trying to be more aggressive to cover the spread or something like that? And sure, I'm not saying it's faultless, but I mean, what the Astros did is like, these hitters are so good when they don't know what's coming. Yet the most successful ones are only successful 30% of the time. And now you're going to tell them what's coming. There's a reason that some of those outings, when you have the in the background, look like batting practice. We are unfortunately out of time, but I know that Steve in Fairfax wanted to know why Dusty Baker would take this job. I'm not the right person to ask that. You know who's a great person to ask that? Clinton Yates. So we're going to ask him next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.